remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning again, everybody.
Good morning.
It's really good to be back. Nice to hear everybody here together, feel it all here together. I thought I'd just mention where I went because it was really interesting. So I went to a conference at Columbia University called Buddhist Chaplaincy and Faith-Based Social Services that was co-sponsored by Renmin University in China. And about 40% of the people there were from China. So Chan Master and various monks and social service people. And I just, you know, I have to say that it was fascinating to hear about what's happening in Buddhism in China. There's a lot going on. And a lot of really strong monks and nuns involved in responding to the needs of people and finding ways to negotiate the governmental restrictions. And it's really alive, and part of it is one of the monks, Venerable Guan, was saying that for the generation that lived through the 10 years of the Cultural Revolution, there's a lot happening as people get older and kind of come to terms with that and communicate to the next generation what it was like and the healing that needs to happen. So anyway, if anybody's interested in asking me more about that, I'm happy to talk to you. But it was a pretty intense 2 days, and it was really, really good. So, and it's always wonderful to know that when I go away, this place is here. I'm sure you all feel the same. So, today I want to talk about self-reflection. One of the benefits of my work in Berkeley is learning about different Buddhist traditions and teaching our tradition to Buddhists from other traditions and finding common threads and differences and similarities. And recently I was reminded of the practice of self-reflection. So I'd like to share some of that with you today. In the Soto Zen tradition, we teach often about letting go of the self. And in our Zazen practice, we specifically practice, we say, Suzuki Roshi said, don't invite your thoughts to tea. Yes. A few weeks ago, Shinshu and I spent some time speaking about Shiryo, Fushiryo, and Hishiryo. Some of you may remember that. So Shiryo is thinking, cogitating. You know, we think all the time, right? Think about things. And then we think that our thinking is the real thing. And that we can think ourselves through our lives. So thinking. Good thing to do. It's good to be able to think. But thinking can also be a problem. So we can look at that thinking and we can say, okay, well, let's just get rid of thoughts. No, let's just get rid of them all. That's Fushiryo. And if we do that, if we try and suppress our thinking, pretty soon we find out that doesn't really work. So the third option is Hishiryo, non-thinking or beyond thinking. So we simply let thoughts go and are not attached to them. So this is very important teaching in our school. Very powerful. Very, very powerful if we do this practice. We learn what thinking is, what it is not. We learn that suppressing thoughts doesn't get us anywhere. And that allowing thought to be what it is, but not be defined by it or pulled around by it, opens up a way of being human, being present, being alive that's transformative. This is essential to the Soto Zen way, to the Zen way. to place ourselves in a relationship with our thoughts and with reality that is not bound by thoughts and reality. So it's important to do this practice, but it's also important to stop and think and pay attention to how our minds work. Specifically, what is the relation between emotion and thought? How are our lives and our relationship with others informed by what we think, or are limited by what we have been, what we currently experience? What is thought in our lives? Buddhist teachings state that our present mind is determined by our past mind. And we kind of don't like that, right? We want to see, think we're free. Free. But actually, who we have been, the choices that we have made, the conditions of our life in the past have a powerful, powerful impact on the mind that we have in the present. What this means is that what we do with our present mind matters. And we can do something. There are many, many models of Buddhist studies and consciousness. One of my favorites is the Yogacara, but where the idea is that we plant seeds. We plant wholesome or unwholesome. We plant seeds with each action. But I don't want to go into that today. Whichever one we look at, whether it be Abhidharma, Yogacara, whatever, this teaching is central, that our present mind is deeply, deeply informed by our past mind, and that what we do with our present mind matters. When we sit zazen in he, she, ryo, we are freed from the processes of thinking and becoming, always becoming, right? When we think, we're becoming, we're controlling, we're wanting. Moving forward, creating a self, having lots of ideas about ourselves and everyone else. So when we practice he, she, ryo, we locate ourselves in a different reality. We're not dragged around by what we think. And we're changed. We're deeply changed by this practice. So I want to, you know, emphasize that. But I also want to move into talking about what we think. We are encouraged to pay attention in general, so we can work directly with what we think. In some Buddhist traditions, for example, in the Jodo Shin tradition, the practice of self-reflection is emphasized. One sets aside time to consider one's life, one's actions, both internal and external. The choices we make with our thoughts are an action. Action isn't just, well, hello, how do you do? It's internal. One's hearts and mind, habits of heart and mind, and can impact us and others. So this is the spirit of taking time to look at who we are and what we've done and what our attitudes are. But it must be done with a certain attitude. So we start with an act of dedication. We start with an intention. May I become awake to my thinking patterns. May I become awake to who I am and how I am. May I do this for the benefit of myself and others. There's a kind of fundamental orientation of wholesomeness, because otherwise it can become a corrosive, critical process. Like, oh, you did this. That's not the idea. So it's based in a spirit of generosity and kindness, deep, deep, deep kindness. Without this basic orientation, we can't afford to see things that we might otherwise, we can afford to see things that we might otherwise shy away from. Thoughts and actions that make us cringe, perhaps, or that don't reflect our best selves. So with this fundamental foundation, we can be fully honest, and we can stop and rest and look and see. We can listen. We can come to know the reality of ourselves and our lives. When we can do this, we become more calm, more understanding of ourselves and others, more grateful. I'll say something more about that in a minute. But just to say, of all the orienting factors that we can cultivate in our lives, gratitude is perhaps the most important, the most healing, the most transformative, and the most accurate. It's a natural expression. It grows naturally in our lives when we see the reality of what is actually happening. So here's a thought experiment, okay? If you determined that you were going to focus as fully as you could each day for a year on everything that you could possibly complain about, every detail that bugs you about the people in your life, every inconvenience from no oat milk at the coffee house, to delays on Highway 17, to a cold or something that slows you down where you think you have to go. And then, of course, the bigger things, disappointments, loss, the many ways we harm each other, all the things that need to change in this world. So imagine if you did that for your full attention for 1 year. What would your mind and heart be like? What do you suppose you'd be doing? How would you relate to others? How would you spend your days? Okay, a full year of endless complaining. Endless focusing on everything that's wrong or that you think is wrong. Now imagine you consistently focused on the whole of your life with an attitude of consistently including all the ways you are supported, sustained, nourished, all the beauty and good. Yes, the people in your life bug you, but they also support you. Yes, you don't get oat milk, but you can enjoy the taste of black coffee or tea. Sure, you're stuck on 17, but look at the rain and the trees. And there is much that is tragic and harmful in the world, but there is also much good. The second way of living does not mean you're a fool. It does not mean you're in denial. You are simply expanding your perspective and including the whole of reality. So, at the end of that year, what do you suppose your mind and heart would be like? What would your relationships be like? What would your day-to-day experience be like? Then ask yourself, who would you rather be? Who do you imagine would be more effective and responsive in addressing the very real needs in our world? Someone who's like this, or someone who's like this? This is the kind of shift that we can make when we pay attention to what we're thinking and what's propelling the next thought. One way of practicing self-reflection is called Nikon. Nikon means basically self-reflection. It was developed from Jodoshin Buddhism. And it's a full process in and of itself, some of which I think is more helpful than others. But it starts with two questions to consider. The first question is, what did I receive today? This is a formal practice. Sit down. Get out a pen and paper. List. What did I receive today? List everything. Everything you can think of. Take 15, 20 minutes to do this. Or you can do it throughout your day. Everything. Mundane, concrete, lofty. Start with something concrete. And then go layer by layer back. So, were you able to get to work? How did the bike or the car or the shoes that you were wearing help you get to work? What about the alarm clock? We might hate the alarm clock, but it helps us, right? So, what people and things supported the existence of those things that support us to get to work on time? Do you have a favorite coffee cup? Teacup? Was it given to you by a friend? Maybe you got a jacket at Goodwill. The food that you eat. Where did it come from? Who helped it grow? Who brought it to market? Who supported them to do that? The earth, the wind, the bugs, the seeds, the previous seeds, the seeds before the seeds. So we can reflect on these things and then keep going, 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 going. This is Thich Nhat Hanh's wonderful descriptions of this. Looking at a piece of paper and seeing the wind and the rain that created the tree that created that. We can reflect on something like a simple kindness that was done to you. Someone held the door for you when you had a bunch of box of stuff, or let you into traffic, or lots of things. What do you imagine created the conditions for that kindness? So this is the first question. What did I receive today? The second question is, what did I give today? Again, be specific and concrete. Did you feed your dog or cat? Did you take the neighbor's garbage out? Did you give someone a ride, a smile, a respectful handshake? Did you listen with care to someone? Even if you're busy or bored? Did you see the person you were talking to? Did you give money or volunteer to a cause that has meaning for you? Did you speak up when something was happening that was harmful? And in the non-sentient world, in dealing with the so-called things of our life, did you pick this up, as you did earlier, with care and set it down with care? Did you wash your cup in the sink or in the dishwasher with care? How did you treat these things that give you the capacity to read without looking at the floor or drink a cup of tea? All of these are ways of giving. And again, these extend out layer by layer. You can consider how might these acts of giving impact others. Of course, we cannot know. We can't know. But we can imagine possibilities. We can imagine. Because we know what happens when someone treats us with respect. When someone takes a moment to listen to what our lives are about. When someone puts the lectern here for us to use. We know something of that. And so we know what it's like to give. So I'd like you to consider a third question. This I added. This is not from Nikon. Now consider this from both directions. What allowed you to give? In other words, what were you given that supported you to be able to give? Extend this one out layer by layer, attending to the causes and conditions, the actions, the facets of reality that support us. Many, many beings, sentient and non-sentient, contribute to our lives, our actions, and we to theirs. Anna Oniglia, who's an artist, made these wonderful and continues to make these wonderful postcards. She also did the logo for our Zendo. And before she moved up north, sat with us. And she does this wonderful postcard that I have in my office. And I can't remember who the quote is from, but it's an image of a tree, and it says, the tree's breath, exhale, is my inhale, and mine theirs. Mm-hmm. Right? So when we pay attention to both of these dimensions, what we're given and what we give, we begin to feel the dynamic reality of our life. We discover the threads of interconnection in our world. And we see how inextricably woven together we are. We see the large and small ways we are impacted and we impact. In this way, we come to understand and directly experience our place in things. Paying attention to the ways we give builds a sense of dignity and self-esteem. Knowing that we can give does something to us. To feel that you have the capacity to give, to have an impact, does something to our sense of pride in a positive way, our sense of esteem, our sense of efficacy, our sense of dignity. It supports a sense of energy. Knowing that we can give because of what we have been given supports a sense of appropriate humility, humor, grace. Such reflections give the self a place to rest, a place in the scheme of things that is life-giving, not just to us, but to everyone. With this sense of rest, we can act as a bodhisattva for the benefit of all beings, without the sense of beleagueredness or isolation. We come to understand Ayayama Roshi is a wonderful woman, Roshi, senior woman Roshi in Japan, says we are the cells of the universe. So when we know ourselves to be a cell of the universe, we are liberated to act. We feel our responsibility, but we also feel the support. So this is very gritty, very down to earth. It takes place in the complexity and difficulties of our lives. It takes place in the difficulties and the beauty. With this understanding, a sense of proportion is restored. Our vision clears. And we can see with our wisdom eye. We can practice with a good heart, a sustained heart, a nourished heart. Gratitude becomes available to us. And our sense of our own ability to give becomes a day-to-day reality. This is deeply restorative. And it's encouraging. It supports what Dogen Zenji calls the dignified activity of a Buddha. A Buddha is someone who realizes this interconnection, who understands and is liberated to life. Not liberated from life, liberated to life. And so there is a sense of dignity and connection and service that's very lively. So I encourage you to take some time each day and ask yourself, number one, what have I been given today? Or you can do this with regards to a relationship. What have I been given by this person or a situation? But what have I been given today? What have I given today? Consider these each layer by layer, extending out, and then mix them together. Reflect on how we are a vital nexus in the web of existence. See what happens over time with the quality of your days when you do this practice, and how you contribute to the world, and how you are aware of what you receive from the world. Okay?